Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Menopause Sisters Show, where our host, Nancy Monroe, co-creator of Cool Cami, the only camisole designed to give women relief from hot flashes, and Laura Dankoff, nurse practitioner and author of Seeds for Change, A Path to Health and Healing, will cover topics related to women in various stages of menopause.
Excited. So I probably had good donuts and coffee in the lobby before the show. So I, because this is October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we're almost done with this month, I thought we would talk about mammograms, since I just had mine this week, which I thought, there's certainly debates about pros and cons of mammograms. I thought that would be a good topic for us to talk about, but also how to live a lifestyle that helps you prevent getting breast cancer to start with. And a lot of women in menopause kind of start getting to that age where they're at higher risks for certain things like that. So I thought we would cover that in today's show. So, Laura, I'm sure you've read some research around pros and cons of mammograms, and I don't know what type of research that you can kind of point to.
This is a very controversial subject, first of all, and I would just tell everybody, you know, I'm just going to throw out that disclaimer that this is not a replacement for seeking attention from your healthcare provider, getting their opinion, and we are not advocating for or against, just providing some facts around this subject because it is very controversial. And And just with things that have come out in the last few years, it really is even left a lot of healthcare providers scratching their head of, okay, what recommendation are we to give women? Because there's three primary governing bodies that provide recommendations for screening for mammograms, and each one of them has a different recommendation. Hmm. So it's just like which guide. Line do you follow? So it's a little confusing. Just some general facts first. Back in the 1960s, 1 in 20 women were diagnosed with breast cancer, and now I believe it's 1 in 7. This is very alarming.
Wow.
And you think, well, maybe we're just better at detecting things earlier and what have you. I would argue against that. I think there's definitely an environmental issue going on here that I don't think a lot of people would dispute. Breast cancer is the leading cause of death in women between 40 and 55, and it's the second leading death, cancer-causing death for women of all ages. First is lung cancer, but for women 40 to 55, it is the leading cause of death. 15% of all breast cancers occur in women under the age of 45, and 80% of breast lumps, just on a positive note, are not cancerous.
Right.
And 70% of cancers are, can be found or first detected basically doing your own self-breast exam, so that there's something to be said to be doing monthly breast exams. And if you are after, we usually would tell women to do it right after their period, but if you're in menopause, I always recommend women do them the first of the month. They just do their breast exam. So that's an easy way to remember that. And I have a lot of women that say to me that don't want to get their mammograms, that, well, there's no breast cancer in my family.
Right.
Well, 80% of women diagnosed with breast cancer have no breast cancer in their family. So this is a false sense of security for these women, and we know that personally in our own family that this is the case as well. A lot of women are very concerned about the repeat exposure to radiation, and that's certainly a valid concern. What really threw this all into a tailspin here in the last few years, there's been a couple really large-scale studies that have come out around this. It was published in the British Medical Journal in February of 2014, but I think the study actually might have come out sooner than that, a couple years prior to that. So this was 2 years ago, and we're still kind of 2.5 years ago, and we're still kind of wondering what to do for women. But in this study, it essentially disputes the benefit versus risk of doing mammograms, which was a shocking result. And this wasn't a small study. It wasn't a short-term study. This study was what we call a longitudinal study, so it was done over many years. In fact, it was done over 25 years, and it involved 90,000 Canadian women. So as you can see, this was a very, very significant study. And what they found is that the death rate between women that had regular mammograms and who just did breast exams or clinical breast exams were done, the death overall between the two groups, 500 women died who received regular mammograms, and 505 women died who were not getting the mammograms. You're talking five people over 25 years of researching this. But what was probably the most alarming thing that came out of this is that one in 424 women who received their mammograms were exposed to unnecessary surgeries, chemo, and radiation due to concerns, we need to check out this lump and see what it is, or they were misdiagnosed with breast cancer. So they were getting chemo unnecessarily, radiation unnecessarily, or they had ductal carcinoma in situ, which is a lot of, there's arguments around that a particular form, because it will never turn into a, you know, concern that it's very little chance that it ever turn into a big full-blown breast cancer of any kind of risk. Some people would claim it's not even a cancer. So, I mean, there's just so much controversy around this. So the cancer researchers have recognized that some cancers can be slow-growing and others can, you know, resolve on their own, they said. Sometimes it's just like, who is that and how do you know?
Right.
A Dr. Anthony Miller from the University of Toronto said whether or not this is beneficial has now become very controversial, he said himself. They would like to see improvements in treatment and in survivability. There was an article also in the New York Times by a Dr. Callagher, who's an epidemiologist and screening researcher at the University of Oslo, and the Harvard School of Public Health. He said, you know, with better treatments, survivability for women's increasing. So that's kind of their argument why there wasn't a huge difference between those that were getting mammograms and those that weren't. But it just causes a lot of angst for the women out there. It also causes a lot of angst, I think, for some healthcare providers that want to do the right thing. You know, but many haven't even read this study, haven't heard of this study. And I think there was another one done in Finland or somewhere also, a large-scale study, basically showing the same thing. So it really leaves us wondering what we should do. I believe it was Dr. Callagher also pointed out that the study does not support screening mammograms in women under the age of 60. So it's just like, okay, what do you do about these people that, you know, you catch them early and they're in aggressive form and you say, well, if they've gotten their mammogram, you know, we could have caught this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just really leaves us wondering what to do. I know some women have opted, did read this study and have opted not to get their mammograms anymore. And, you know, I feel like we should be doing something, you know, certainly you should be doing breast exams. Some women have opted out for thermography.
Yeah.
So a thermography is infrared images that can pick up heat changes that can suggest inflammation, which can put off concerns, you know, where these heat sources are for possible precancerous or cancerous cells. that can be picked up. Oftentimes, they, 8 to 10 years before it would ever be detected on a mammogram. So
wait a minute. Say that again.
Yeah, the heat sources could actually, pick up concerns for potential development of breast cancer 8 to 10 years before it's ever picked up on a mammogram.
Wow.
So the question is, if a thermography could be a screening tool and a mammogram a diagnostic tool, I think the argument, the jury's still out on this. I don't think we know what to do about this information yet.
Well, when I was there, they said, oh, next time you come in, we're going to do 3D imaging.
Mm-hmm.
But is that still an X-ray, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a greater amount of radiation than the 3D mammogram.
Oh, jeez.
And a lot of women are getting the 3Ds now. They feel it can help them detect things a little better than you can on a 2D, and that may be true. But I think you are, I may be wrong, but I think you are getting a little bit more radiation doing the 3D mammograms. So it's really hard to know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, can I just say something? I'd like to interject here.
Yeah.
I don't know, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so anyway, so I just have some thoughts. First of all, from what I had read, that, yes, self-exam is important, I have read that by the time you feel a lump or something abnormal, it's been there for a few years already, and its cells multiply over a certain period of years. So by the time you actually can feel it, it's probably already been there, for quite some time, and it might have been picked up sooner with a mammogram or a thermogram. Now, in the situation in our family, I don't know. I was a thermogram. I'm not real happy about given what's happened. I've been through I just had a 3D one done, and before that, it was a digital. And when they did the digital, it's like, oh, here's, you talk about going through different, intensive procedures or whatever. So with the digital, it was like, oh, there's a suspicious area here. And so then I had to come back and have it wasn't a biopsy, but I forget what it was called. But anyway, had that done, that was fine. And they marked it so they knew in the future that was there. Now this time I had a 3D. And I said, now, are you picking up more stuff with this 3D like you did when you went digital? And they said, well, we don't think so, but if we do, then we need to do an ultrasound. Well, I guess we had to have an ultrasound, and now I have to come back. And even the doctors came in, the radiologist said, well, we're seeing more things with the 3D, but I don't think it's anything, but we want you to come back in 6 months to have another just regular mammogram. Just to make sure that nothing has changed. So, and I've done self exams, and of course don't feel anything. But so it is very, very confusing. I think my personal feeling is that we've all heard the stories of women under the age of menopause who had breast cancer found. I think that when you're young and you have not gone through menopause and you have a breast cancer found, I think you do worse than what you do after menopause, primarily because of the hormone issue. So I think in general, my personal feeling, and this is my own personal feeling, is that get your mammograms done or thermograms that I'm not real hip on a thermogram either now. And I think with thermograms, if they see something, then you still end up having to have a mammogram. Is that correct?
Yes. That's what I recommend people do. I say, well, if you're going to get a thermography and if something's abnormal, you need to have a mammogram to look at it further. there's some arguments as well that there's not enough research behind thermography, which actually that's not true. That there actually has been a great deal of research that was actually done in the 70s and 80s showing that thermographies were a very reliable. Actually, there was a 10-year study completed by a Dr. Michael Gathery, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, PhD, in 1981 that showed that an abnormal thermogram was 10 times more significant as a future risk indicator. So it's more of a risk indicator for breast cancer. These researchers also reported that this study showed how 60% of women later were diagnosed with a cancer who had an abnormal thermography. And this is due to the fact that the thermal imaging can pick up cell changes, like I said, 8 to 10 years before it shows up on a mammogram. So I guess what you could say where a thermography is can be very beneficial is if you're starting to see these changes, you really need to take a hard look at your lifestyle and what can you do to kind of decrease your risk of, you know, because inflammation is a known source for diseases, including cancer as well. And one thing that I strongly, strongly recommend to help your immune system to fight things, and there's definite research around this and survivability, particularly if you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, that you get your vitamin D levels checked.
Mm-hmm.
Women whose vitamin D, if they've been diagnosed with breast cancer, the recommendation is that they get their vitamin D between 70 to 100. That's the top end of the range. Most likely it's not. I mean, if every breast cancer patient that I have checked their vitamin D level, because if they come to me, I'm saying, you've got breast cancer, you need to have your vitamin D level checked, they've all been extremely low. And so I'm a big proponent of them optimizing that vitamin D level. Now, if you don't have breast cancer, I usually tell people to get their levels between 50 to 75. But if you have it, 70 to 100. And then I also recommend, as far as being proactive goes, that you eat organic whole foods, you eliminate processed foods and sugars, and you do what you can to reduce the inflammation in your body.
Well, what about hormones, artificial hormones, too?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, if a woman has breast cancer, they cannot be taking hormones. It's just going to feed it. And if they've had it in the past, and because a lot of women will struggle with hot flashes, with the treatment after their breast cancer to try to improve their survivability and suppress hormone function, like with tamoxifen, the side effect of that is women either, if they're not in menopause, it throws them in there. And if they are, either way, one of the side effects that they suffer with is hot flashes. And, you know, if a woman can't be doing hormones, quite honestly, and I'll full disclosure, Nancy, I mean, your cool cami could be a lifesaver for these women.
Exactly. Well, recently, I mean, that's... Somebody bought the Cool Me mats from me, and she literally said, "You have saved my life," because she couldn't sleep. She's just constantly hot at night, and you know, if you don't get sleep, yeah, your life is hell.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got a family member that's going through certain treatments, and she told her doctor about it, and now her doctor has 9 different clinics that she's wants to talk to me about it. And then I recently had my physical, and I was saying to the doctor, I said, well, no, I don't take hormones, and I invented something for hot flashes. And I didn't say any more. And then she's kind of going through the exam, and she looks at me, she's like, well, what did you invent? So I told her about it. She's like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. So I gave her my card. So certainly anybody that's interacting with women in a practitioner side of things, that if they are suffering that's, again, it is instant relief. In fact, I was just talking to my husband. I have an infrared gun that measures heat. And so I was trying to somehow measure myself as I'm having a hot flash and then putting on a cool cami app, you know, immediately showing how it provides instant relief, but I can't do it myself, so I'm going to have him assist me with that sometime. Like, okay, I'm having hot flash. Get in here. Timing is everything. So, but yeah, I mean, that there's so many uses for it, but that, you know, and I invented it to help myself, first and foremost, selfishly, but 22 million women every single year have that condition. And so even if you're not being treated for cancer or breast cancer, just in general, that's an ailment that many, many women want safe relief from. And the fact that it's reusable, you know, I even bought, is it DIM? Yeah, I bought DIM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought, well, gosh, this is like $19 a bottle. And it, I kind of think it helps a little bit, but, you know, I can't say for sure. And it just could be, you know, the what's the effect for you? You took a pill, you don't know if it's the right pill. What do you call that?
Oh, placebo effect?
Yeah, placebo effect. And so I thought, but gosh, you know, if I have to buy a bottle every month, that's going to add up.
Right.
Versus just buying Cool Cami once, and it lasts forever. I mean, I've been wearing the same Cool Cami for the last 3 or 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, do the math.
Right, right. And you're not adding any hormone risk to yourself as well.
And I don't know if taking DIM or any other supplement, herbal supplement, that seems safe if you take it for many, many years. I mean, again, is there a buildup in tolerance of that too?
Yeah, DIM actually can help with the estrogen dominance. So it actually is a preventative thing, I would say, along with taking vitamin D. Those would be two things I think are very beneficial to women to decrease their overall risk, along with a healthy diet and so forth. But a lot of women have even tried various, you know, hormone replacement, and they still get hot flashes. So if that's not working for you, they should consider doing the Cool Cami. And also, they're reducing their risk. You know, I had a woman seeing me the other day, and she was having some, she had been on bioidentical hormones for over 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And she started having some postmenopausal bleeding. It's just like, okay, well, that's not so good.
Yeah.
And maybe nothing, but it could be very concerning. You know, we have to make sure there isn't a uterine cancer there. So now she has to go through, you know, a lot of anxiety and worry and, you know, invasive procedure to find this out. I mean, I'm not advocating for or against any of these things. You have to ultimately just, you know, do your research.
Right.
Decide what's right for you. And, no matter what you choose, if your stress level's through the roof and your diet is horrible, you know, taking any kind of hormone therapy, actually, you're only going to get mixed results just because of those other factors that do play a large role as well in your hormone balance and how you feel and so forth.
Right.
Things just can't be fixed with taking a pill.
No.
You know, you need to do some of the hard work that kind of goes along with that and take a good look at your lifestyle and what have you. So.
Yeah. Well, it just goes back to what we talk about is being your own advocate. Proactive and taking, you know, taking responsibility for yourself.
Yeah. And as far as mammogram, as far as what is the screening, you know, guidelines for women, let's see. One, the American Cancer Society's guideline is women age 45 to 55 should get a mammogram every year, and then after 55, they're actually saying every other year now.
Mm.
The United States Preventive Task Force, and then also a gynecology organization, I believe their recommendation is one of them's every year after the age of 40, and then the other one I think is every other year until 50, and then maybe every year. So it's just like, okay, what do we tell people?
Yeah.
You know, I guess the one that I think, I mean, you just have to decide as a, you know, a woman, you know, do you want to get it every year after the age of 55, or do you want to get it every other year? I guess you have to take it into the context of what your risks are.
Yeah.
And what you're comfortable with. But it's just hard to know what to do. And if you are getting thermographies, if your thermogram's normal, I would say, okay, you probably have a lower risk. But if your thermogram is, I believe it's called a TH3 or TH4, they come, the readings come like TH1 and 2 are lower risk, and TH3 and 4 are greater risk. If you're in a 3 or a 4, get your mammogram, get it checked out, make sure everything's okay, and that's just a impetus to kind of reevaluate your lifestyle and future risk. Potentially, but either way, thermogram, mammogram, I think the jury's still out. We still aren't sure what to do. If you go into, you know, a lot of your natural medicine arenas, definitely they are very anti-mammograms. Like I said, I'm not going to speak for one versus the other. You have to decide for yourself, knowing the risk and benefits of each, what is right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, there's still no black and white, unfortunately.
Right.
And again, I think if this was a male issue, there would be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just, I think the controversy and discussion is still going on. And you know, what I think would be great, you know, maybe if they did MRIs, but those are too expensive, and they are doing more MRIs. Women that fall into a certain risk category.
Mm-hmm.
But those are very hard to obtain. They're certainly more expensive. They're more time-consuming.
Well, at least insurance does cover this. I mean, now at least they've said, okay, this is something that's, it is, you know, breast cancer, as you said, it was the primary cause of death. So, all right, insurance companies recognize that fact, and so they will allow that to be covered on any insurance program, as far as I know. So that is one thing that at least they've recognized
right.
that, and they cover that now.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the Affordable Health Care Act, is that, you know, preventative things like colonoscopies and mammograms, you know, they are covered because it is a preventative.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So that is a benefit. So take advantage of that. You know, don't worry that it's going to cost you any money. And it doesn't take long. I mean, I was in and out half an hour.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
And I actually lived very close to where this was done. So I was even in the car 5 minutes. That was it. So for me, it was stupid not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just talk it over with your healthcare provider. You know, take their recommendations, and what they also, you know, talk about is they look for patterns. Like one X-ray from the next from your previous. So because I hadn't had mine done the last 3 years, like, well, you know, we don't have much to compare to.
Yeah, right.
See that historical to see if there are patterns like that. So I think the heat thermography was probably, I think that would be the recommendation I would suggest too, Laura, because as you say, you can pick up things that even a mammogram wouldn't have picked up.
Right, right.
So, on that note, Liz, you're up. Who's our guest?
What's that?
Who's our guest next week?
Oh, next week we're going to have Barbara Hannelore on. I'm very excited to have her on. She talks about how the moon cycles can affect women still cycling, and we're going to explore with her how the moon cycle can affect us in perimenopause and menopause as well. So it should be a really exciting show, and a different perspective of how the lunar cycles can be affecting our mood and energy and sleep and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, sounds like a great show, and so join us next week. Thanks for joining. Thanks, everybody.